Welcome aboard our vessel. I'll be your cook. Join me and my trusty ally, the captain, as we set sail through our relationship with music, film, literature, and everything in between, as well as our ongoing exploration into mental health and well-being. Anchors up!
So I don't know. I meant to tell them I don't actually like the single, but I think they'll be all right, won't they?
I'm recording.
Oh shit! Oh yeah, it was great, wasn't it? Okay. Oh, well, we're back. you're sat opposite me. We're back in our home studio.
Yeah.
My own shipping container, shall we say? And yeah, first off, checking in. How are you?
Yeah, good. Yeah, it was good. We've been energised for the pod this week, so we're excited.
I thought you wanted to stretch.
I know, yeah. Trust me, Bruno's energised. Yeah. That's a positive one. No, good week. Just getting back into work after some annual leave, which is always clearing emails and just trying to find out, you know, remember how to do your job, basically.
What your name is.
Yeah, when you go into calls, like, what calls this?
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, good. Yeah, busy, as normal, but managed to get... You know, sometimes it's quite lucky when sessions get cancelled to have a bit of time to yourself, just to breathe and to chill. But also, you know, I don't know if people realise Pseudocool have a new song out.
You do.
I don't know whether Lloyd mentioned it enough, but it's actually we're recording on release day.
Yes, the roller.
We've both listened to it.
Yep.
On good speakers. What do you think?
Yeah, despite what you said earlier. All jokes aside, no, yeah. It's a cracker. We expected a bit of a different sound, and I think if you go back to the podcast and hear, I think it was particularly Lloyd talking about it around the sound and where it came from. You can hear it in the track. And what I like again is if now that's their sixth single, and we see like how they're changing sounds again. And it's like bass heavy track, isn't it?
It was a sort of one where, you know, I've listened to it a few times. The first time I listened to it, I was like, I need to turn this up a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. I was like, I'm going to have to close the windows and the doors because people are going to... I don't know why. It was just one that I just wanted to turn up loud.
Well, your message was funny, wasn't it? Because I was just on my headphones after I dropped Nora off to nursery and you were like, I'm waiting to get home to put on my good speakers.
Yeah. I didn't want to listen my virginity of roller to be taken in the car. That just sounds completely...
I know, I'm just going to Anyway, speaking of Pseudocool, they did set us a challenge last week and they've left us a message just checking in. So over to Pseudocool.
Hello. It's Lloyd and Kath back from Pseudocool. We just wanted to check up on what you thought of our challenges for you.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So, you know, a great challenge, firstly. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to split this into two parts. So do you want to take the book that she recommended first, because you found something off the back of it, didn't you, as well, that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I think it's just mentioned we're working our way through it.
Yeah.
You know, it's one that will take our time, but also sort of picking up on, you know, I guess I don't want to say like women's movement in sport or just more appreciation. There is a documentary which I will be watching very soon called No Woman, No Try.
Okay.
And it's all about how women's rugby looks to grow, but also what it has to overcome to grow. Also just noting, like, on that, I know the Women's Six Nations did it and they linked up with TikTok. Like, they were having sellout games, like at Gloucester. Brilliant. They sold out the stadium, so, you know, there's a good movement. I'm also looking forward to diving more into the book as well.
And also, like, rugby's further behind football, isn't it, the thing? So I think it was like Barcelona played a match earlier this year to a sellout Nou Camp, which is like 90,000 people, but football has got bigger funding as in general, you know. But so when you try and filter that down to the women's game, it gets tougher. So that's the book is an ongoing one for us. The documentary is a recommendation that the captain found, but also they did challenge us to think about the most pseudo cool thing we've ever done. So what did you, when you had to go back through your memories?
I did. It was an interesting I was like, okay, where do I go? I actually went to technically my fourth year of uni, my PGCE, was when I started dabbling in drinking ale. And one of my friend's fathers worked at the Badger Brewery.
Okay.
So he gave me a box of different ales and we were sipping them. And he's like, oh, you can really taste like the grapefruit in it and stuff. And I was just reading the back and he's like, oh yeah, there's definitely watermelon in this one, isn't there? And I literally, and I think still to this day, I'm a little bit sort of just blagging my way through. Like, oh yeah, I drink ale. I'm fine on ale.
Yes. This is a shout out to the Tomses. I got three friends who are all called Tom, and they're massive into their craft beer. And I remember we did the Bermondsey Beer Mile before, which is just a run of London small brewers and stuff. Brilliant day out and stuff. And they sat there talking about it. Like, and all I could say is, this one's really hoppy.
That's all I could say. Well, this one's a bit darker.
This one's hoppy. Like, why is this one cloudy? Oh, that's unfiltered out. Oh, right. Okay.
So I think that's still one I'm still living. But how about you?
Yeah, so me and Sarah were laughing about this in the car. I checked it with her. We went to Dubrovnik on holiday back some years ago, and we found this little bar. So we were, if anyone's been to Dubrovnik, it's a walled city, and there was a little bar just overlooking the Adriatic Ocean. Beautiful setting, and we were sat facing the water. And these ladies from America sat next to us, slightly older than us, and they started talking about, oh, we'll brought you to Dubrovnik, and I'd just been to a museum and read that all the architecture in Dubrovnik was Baroque.
Yeah.
So I suddenly went, oh, we've come for the Baroque architecture. And I heard Sarah's chair move next to me forwards to look at me and go, where's he going to go from here?
Yeah.
And I was just then thinking, oh, and she goes, I love Baroque architecture. To the woman. I was like, do not ask me anything else about Baroque architectures. I think I moved the conversation swiftly on. But please, again, anyone listening, and if you didn't catch the Mina pseudo call, it's like basically where you try and say that you know something to fit in, basically, isn't it? So where you've maybe blagged it a bit to try and fit in, we'd love to see. And you asked a question, Kigov would come back.
We did. I also just want to, just in case next time you need to know just some stuff about Baroque architecture, that it's, you know, their grandeur, sensuous, richness, there's lots of drama, there's lots of dynamism. It's from Italy, emerged in the late 16th century. There you are. So just in case you need to know. He did. And it was about ordering a hot curry. And
way above being your tolerance,
your tolerance level. And I think most people have been there, and they've regretted it and on the day, but probably the morning after a little bit as well.
Okay, we're actually going back for a more traditional format.
I know.
Me today. So where we talk about a band, bring another band, which is Clue for You First, on board. One we've been building up to a while, it's episode 60. There's also an event coming up that ties in, we'll talk about in a bit as well. But this band came from Cwmaman, which for anyone outside of Cwmaman would know, this is a typical Welsh mining village. I think Howard Marks described it as, you would never go there unless you got really, really lost, not even to pass through, you know, to go somewhere else. So I think, you know, the colliery closed there, as it did for a lot of Welsh valleys, you know, where I'm from, Bedwistry Thomas, you know, they all closed in a similar time. And then obviously from there, the local community that had been built on it struggled. The shop shut and moved to larger towns, etc. So typical Welsh mining village. And this band, actually, the father of the lead singer was actually a professional singer himself. And sang on the same bill as Roy Orbison when Roy Orbison came to South Wales, a claim to fame. And the lead singer followed his dad around, carried the speakers for him. And he said mainly because his dad would buy him a Chinese takeaway after, but give him give him like a fiver for carrying the speakers. But he said his dad was one of the best he's ever seen at work in the crowd. So he started to watch and observe him and think about how he could, you know, maybe build on that in the future. Dad bought him his first acoustic guitar at the age of 11 and said, if you can master that yourself, it was a really rubbish one, but you know, then, you know, he said, you'll never be lonely in your life if you can learn to play that guitar. And then the lead singer lived at number 54, and then the drummer lived at number 62, just up the road. And the lead singer, Kelly, was practicing Highway to Hell in his house, and in between, he heard someone else practicing Highway to Hell on their drums up the street. So they decided to get themselves together because they also had a shared interest and became what was called Zephyr. So that was the name of the band first. Kelly was 12 at that time and Stuart was around 15. And then from there they sort of split because it just, you know, different times of their life, going through teen years. We bring Richard into the mix now, bass player, who grew up with Kelly. They were born in the same hospital. He joins the group and they call themselves Blind Faith. And then quite quickly after that, they call themselves the Tragic Love Company, and they start touring the country. Now, no one knew them. So they took all the people from the village with them on bus tours to venues like around London and places like that. So they had a crowd there to play to. At the time, they had a second guitar player, but they dropped them and went to be a three-piece. That's when they moved from being more of a bluesy band to a punk. They called themselves a bit more punk at that time. They practiced Thursday and Sundays at Carmarthen Youth Club. And Kelly then, at that time, whilst he was in art college, worked on a fruit and veg stall. And he says he was earning 12 quid a day. And he loved watching people in dialogue, talking to each other. And he would just write little observations on the back of the brown bags you get your fruit and, you know, your fruit and veg and off there. And one day, a boy came up to them and asked what time the train was. And later on, they found that boy had actually jumped in front of the train and taken his own life, which inspired Kelly to write Local Boy in a Photograph. They start sending off their demos. They send 10 tapes every Thursday, and they got hundreds of rejection letters. They needed a new name as well around that time. They were going to call themselves Mabel Cable after Stuart's mum, because they thought it sounded like Lynyrd Skynyrd. But Stuart's dad had an old record player that was called a Falcon Stereophonic, and so they went for the Stereophonics, which we finally arrived at the name, the band, which everyone should know. They were spotted at a live gig by producers. Steve Lamacq, obviously famous DJ over here picking up bands, picked up on them as well, supported them. He liked their graft, their determination. He just said, they will get signed, he said after he saw them. They make their first TV appearance on HTV in Wales in 1996. And they got a new manager around that time. And rather than take them to London, he realised that these were Welsh Valley Boys. He brought the London music executives to South Wales. And that's when they get picked up basically by V2 Records. So Richard Branson's subsidiary of Virgin Records. Around that time, this is 1996, they opened for the Manic Street Preachers, they opened for Skunk and Nancy. And one of the sets was going so well on the support, there was a power cut halfway through it. And the talk was that they were smashing it, and the band coming on after them were like, we're not having any more of that. Yeah. They're doing too good. They opened for The Who. Roger Daltrey's always said he likes to give young bands a chance. He knows how difficult it is for bands to break through. And he said they didn't get booed off, which is unique for a Who crowd. So he said, I knew in front of 17,000 people after they'd been used to playing small places. And then they went on what's called a dartboard tour, where their tour manager just threw darts at a board with countries on around the country. That's where we're going to go.
I think we should do that.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? Let's get that signed off by the wife.
Yeah, we'll hit John O'Groats and Land's End.
Yeah, that's the start of the tour. Yeah, back to Glasgow.
Yeah,
and then they were building up to their first album, which was obviously built around the single Local Boy. The Photograph got released in 1997, followed by the album. Word gets around, immediate world tour, and I finished it off by just saying, made it. So, quite a quick rise. I mean, they started playing in 92, but obviously the real work started around, you know, 94, 95, and then through 96, 97. So, Local Welsh Boys, what's your reflections and all of that?
Well, I guess the first is that's some claims to fame for me that, I did perform at the Carmarthen Arts Centre in pantomime.
Yeah, you did.
They also played Aberdare Coliseum. I also performed at Aberdare Coliseum. So technically I'm them. You know, I'm like their fifth, sixth member of Stereophonics. For me it's that the linking back sort of to, you know, how much we can see Welsh music growing now.
Yes.
And how much it was then. You know, it was just people from a small town in the valleys.
Yes.
You know, it's just a group of people getting together and just going for it. And one thing which I've noticed, you know, going back and being fortunate enough to listen through a lot of their records, is I can almost pinpoint where I was throughout it as well.
Yes,
it kind of, you know, pinpoints the time of where you are, you know, whether it's Roll Up and Shine comes on, T-shirt Suntan, you know, even up to Dakota then. You know, and like, actually I'll admit it, the first time I heard Dakota I didn't like it.
Didn't you?
And this one that really, you know, now it's like, okay, this is it's a proper festival
anthem.
You know, it just gets everyone going. And then, you know, I know we'll touch on sort of what happened further on from then, you know, with the rest of the band, but also looking at just the amount of support they had from their families.
Definitely.
As well, you know, they just they were around them, and it was a community. You know, it wasn't just the band on tour.
No.
It was a whole community on tour and just taking over and just really stamping the mark of identity,
helping them.
Yeah.
That's Welsh to me. Growing up in a Welsh mining, closed mining village, it just reminded me so much of my childhood. That's what everyone did.
Mm.
We all hung around in large groups, you know, and if one of us went to do something, all right, you might have the mick taken out of it, but really deep down they support, you know, they would support you.
Yeah.
Same with the families. I think, you know, doors always open in those terraced houses. You can go in anyone. So if your mum and dad were out, you'd go down the next house, you know, and just go and you'd get fed and you'd get watered. That's the real Welsh community spirit. And what's a real, not a shame. I mean, I see it more when I go back to my nan's in Tre Thomas. You've got it a bit here with your cul-de-sac, but it's not as prevalent nowadays, is it? You really love your relationship with your cousin. You do lots together. You've got your chat going. You celebrate things together. That's what Welsh villages were all about, weren't they?
Yeah, and the only thing that brought this about was the pandemic.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Yeah.
The only thing that brought us all together fully as a community, and it is, you know, we're very lucky.
Yeah.
You know, and what you've got, we said, you know, you've got, we call it John Brown, did you arrive for the first time? Got collared by one of our neighbours who likes to talk to everyone.
Yeah, definitely. But to me, that they encapsulated it.
Yeah.
They also encapsulated the hard work and ethic of what Welsh people have built into them, just especially from those kind of backgrounds. But let's go back. So I think the local boy is the big story. I mean, you know, Kelly's working on a fruit and veg stall, and he said he literally wrote so many lyrics on the back of brown bags. But they talked about that song being a real celebration of that person. You know, he had that fleeting encounter with them. And obviously, when a death happens in a local village, it does affect the whole village, doesn't it, as well? So just any reflections on that song in general and just the meaning of it and things like that, really?
Until I heard his solo album, when he talked through it, I didn't know the story. I just enjoyed singing along to it. And then I think it was working in the field and stuff. But you do notice, you know, there's one recently that's happened in the valleys, and it was a youngster, very popular, and you notice how it rocked the whole community. Yeah, we've gone up twice to do different training, one to the school, and we're going up to the rugby club to do training as well. And it is, you know, it really, it's brought them all together.
Yeah.
But everyone was shaken.
Yes.
From the teachers to the pupils to, you know, the postman.
Yeah,
it is, it's that whole impact of it. And then, always for Kelly Jones, just how articulately he does it.
Definitely.
And saying, you know, and like just smelling, you know, it's recognizing things, you know, smell. You know, and it's all that sort of stuff. The time of year again. And it's
marking anniversaries and stuff, yeah. I think he called it a celebration. It's been talked about, his storytelling. We will mention Don't Let the Devil Take Another Day. That'll weave through. So that's where Kelly stripped back the phonic songs, didn't do them with the phonics because he said he had to kind of do this on his own. Because he wrote the lyrics to all the songs and sort of give some explanations, didn't he, about what he was doing. But isn't he fantastic at in between the songs telling the story?
He's a storyteller. He's such a good storyteller of just, it just makes you listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's it's the sense of humour he's got as well and stripping things back. There's one where he's telling a story about catching his mate sleeping with his girlfriend, like they broke up and then he found her in bed with him and how he smashed the thing. But he told it funnily and then told about, he wrote a song as an olive branch to his friend and realised that it's about forgiveness, you know, as well. But I think, you know, it's him decide. We were talking about inspiration with Kathy from Pseudocall, weren't we, last week? She read the Lily Allen book and started songwriting. If we just go back a little bit from that local boy, his father.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of people we talk about a lot on you is, unfortunately, for a lot of the people we speak about, they don't have a solid father figure in their life. So they do it as almost rebellion or to try and process their experiences. But actually, and he's still now.
Yeah.
You know, they're still around. And he watches out. His dad's what Roy Orbison like. He was a professional singer, signed to Parlophone Records. But I thought that, again, it's that observation. Some people are watchers, aren't they? You know, and I think Kelly was a real watcher. So I think he probably crafted a lot of the phonics in his mind through watching his dad, observing people in conversation, and then getting them down to cool 3-minute songs. So it's good to have that inspirational figure in your life that calls you to action, isn't it, I suppose, as well. So I love how, you know, that for me is a good story, and it's good that his dad's still around. His dad's been able to watch him go through that, but he's also watched Kelly go through difficulties. His mum and dad have helped him through that. There's a lot of difficulties. The first one is Stuart Cable.
Yeah.
Probably twice. When they realised that they actually couldn't be in the band because of the drinking.
Yeah.
But he actually died accidentally, didn't he? It was a big drinking session over a weekend, and his girlfriend caught him choked on his own vomit. And that would have been a blow, mate, wouldn't it? Do you know what I mean? Going through that.
And it was interesting listening. So I'm pretty sure I listened to Fern Cotton's Happy Place podcast, where he spoke about when he found out, the day he found out about Stuart's death was the day he was going to his uncle's funeral. I believe it would be Clyde Coyd Crematorium, which is just up by Aberdare. I'm guessing that's where it would be. And he said that the hardest thing for him was the fact that he was going to grieve his uncle, but he knew the press were going to be on his tail.
Yeah.
And he's going through this whole grieving process whilst, you know, for one person, whilst finding out about another person.
Yeah, yeah.
And with the press just everywhere and all around him. And he, you know, he did, he openly said that he didn't get closure until he wrote Before Anyone Knew Our Name.
Yeah.
You know, that was when. And, you know, when was that? That's 7 years after.
Yeah.
You know, around seven, it took him 7 years to really process what happened and actually find some form of closure to the death of his mate. But just imagine, just the double whammy hit one day. You know, it's grieving bad enough losing, you know, your uncle, and then to find out that on that same day, your close mate.
Yeah. And also as well, they probably hadn't had a chance to fully repair as well, you know, because I think for Stuart Cable, it was his drinking, he, you know, getting a bit out of hand and, you know, showing up late for things or not showing, you know, because obviously they banged into the fame, and I think the first two albums were a whirlwind for them. But I remember Kelly talking about Jeep, basically, Just Enough Education to Perform, and he felt like the band was falling apart a little bit then. And then the next album, Gotta Go There to Come Back, he felt like he was falling apart. And it's around that time that Stuart Cable leaves and they have to look for a new drummer. They were very much a band who liked to release an album every 2 years at the very most. But then because of the fame and the cocaine comes in, they've talked about that, the drinking, the celebrity, they're mingling in different circles, they're staying in nicer hotels, you know, they're not sleeping in the back of a van anymore. And then we talk a lot about authenticity and their song material changes.
Yeah.
Because they can't write about being boys from the vinyl because they're in nicer houses.
Yeah, they're not anymore. The they've moved out of that,
And just, but they've kept that core group of fans, haven't they? They've taken the fans on the journey with them. And that's, I think, because of Kelly's storytelling. But I think difficult in terms of Stuart leaves, they're a bit estranged. He finds out he dies. And that's probably why it took him 7 years, because some people do... This is probably a good thing to bring you in. People do take longer to process and some people are quick, aren't they? There's a different process for everyone, isn't there, with processing grief?
Yeah. Well, yeah, if everyone has their own individual grief journey. I was talking to Charlotte this week about it. She's writing some stuff about loss. And she said, oh, I've got to talk about the tasks and, you know, the way it is. And I'm like, well, don't just completely get rid of that, because everyone manages change. You know, if you look at business, if you look at working from home, everyone manages it differently and processes it in their own time. You know, there shouldn't be an expectation of, you know, work people, they say, oh, and loads of people said, oh, after 6 months you'll be fine, and it's like, that's not how it works.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
it can take years, you know. And that's, you know, obviously his main thing was, you know, I mean, he's a storyteller, he clearly processed it to the point where he wrote that song.
He talks about the songs being like almost like a diary, like, you know, because they're all very personal. The one thing you hear anyone talking about him, I think Rhys Ivins is on a documentary, he's good friends with Rhys Ivins, Tom Jones, you know, and many others. He was friends with David Bowie before as well. I like Rhys Ivins saying, you're a really honest man, you know, and every time I'm around you, you tell it as it is.
Yeah.
But not in a way where I think he rams it down his throat, it's just that's the way he is. Mm. You know, he tells you how he feels, he wears his heart on his sleeve. Again, probably a Welsh trait in general, not for everyone, but just the way we're quite emotional people and happy to, you know, talk and share. And that would have been really difficult. And for Phonics fans in general who'd followed him through all of that, you know, he says, we started this band on a dead end street, you know, before anyone knew, I miss you, man. He says that in the lyrics, don't he, a few times, which is big. And then I think, you know, moving through again, you know, we looked at, talk about Don't Let the Devil Take Another Day. He actually had a polyp on his vocal cord, didn't he? So his main tool, you know, if you're a workman, you know, whatever profession you've got or a skill, he's had it taken away from him. We talk about voices, having your voice heard. He literally had his voice taken away, didn't he?
Yeah.
He wasn't allowed to speak.
And he's got such a unique voice. Like, if you hear that voice, you know who it is.
Yeah.
Like, singing, it's like, oh, I know who that is.
Yeah. It's like a cross, it's like a bluesy, rocky, like, it's hard to pin down, but he's got such a powerful voice. It's taken away from him to the point where he had to move back in his mum and dad's, isn't he, back to the Welsh Valleys. Had to stay in the house because if he went out, people would recognise him and want to talk to him, and he wouldn't be able to talk. And he had to retrain his voice to sing. And if you watch the documentary, Don't Let the Devil Take Another Day, it's not free anywhere at the moment. You have to pay for it, but it's worth it if you're into it. He had to get a vocal trainer and retrain. And what's really difficult to watch at times is when he's trying to sing songs he's sung for years and he can't hit the notes. What do you think psychologically, because you're doing it, trying to get back every day, hard to take? I think, because you've worked with professional people in the past, haven't you, and sports people and all not. When they lose that, what impact does it really have on them?
Well, it's losing your whole identity, really, mm. or it's reinforcing what your identity is going to be now. Because, I mean, well, yeah, do you describe it as an amputation? When you lose your voice, you know, you've lost part of yourself. You know, you've lost the one thing which, like, for everybody, everyone's voice is unique.
Mm.
You know, and everyone's voice does change
as
you go through, you know. Like the two, you know, there's different stages for men where it changes when you're younger, it also changes when you get older.
Mm.
And it's how you manage that change. But then, yeah, when it comes to singing, it's, you know, for someone like him, like, how do I change this song so I can do it?
You watch, like, this man, he's really determined, professional. They can't, this vocal coach can't, like, you know, he followed the process. He was like, trust the process. Mm. And he did, but you can see him in there, like, I wrote down power taken away, but I also wrote discipline determined. And he said when he was alone in the studio trying to recover, he was losing his head. He said, I was losing my mind because I thought it's never coming back. I watched him recover. I've put your tears. I cried watching it because he's such like a figure that I've known for years. I said, soundtrack my life. And you're watching him really go through this personal battle. Luckily, it wasn't cancerous, the polyp. They were able to remove it and everything else. But when 2 months after the operation, he'd gone through his training, they recorded their 11th studio album, Kind, in 11 days. And he didn't tell the producer anything, even though when they show some takes, he said it normally takes him 2 takes to do a song.
Yeah.
To get the first one down, it took him 9 hours in the booth, he said. And he said the producer knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
But Kelly wouldn't say, he only told him after. And I just think that's amazing. Also, obviously, just through the family going through a big change in their life, wasn't it? With Colby.
Yep.
As well. So Colby went through transition. That's Kelly's son.
Mm-hmm.
And how the family reacted to that. I think he talks about that on the Kind Place. Is it on the, what, is it the
yeah,
Kind
Place? Yeah, I think it's the Happy Place. Sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And the thing which I like about him, and also, you know, when you listen to his records, is how vulnerable he's able to be in front of other people.
Definitely.
And he said, I really struggled. Mm. He said, I really struggled because it's a grieving process of losing, you know, in his mind. Initially, it was, I'm losing my daughter. But then also, you know, what do most fathers, you know, would like to have a son? He's like, well, I'm gaining a son here.
Yeah.
So he said, I was really stuck in how to deal with it, what to do about it. But also just how the school were as well. The school were open arms.
Yeah, they were.
Because
Colby goes to No bullying.
Yeah. Colby goes to an old girls school.
Yeah.
And the school were like, yeah, fine. You know, that's fine. You know, we're accepting. And
yeah.
I think he's in London. He lives in London now, doesn't he?
Yes,
if I'm right, I think he lives sort of down that way. But it is a grieving process, and I think he talks about how he had to work, almost how to process losing the daughter without fully saying goodbye, because Colby's mind was made up in, you know, identity. And I know, and Kelly still says that he still finds it. He said he would have found it trickier if Colby said, I wanted to be non-binary and be referred to as them or they.
Yeah.
And he said, I would really struggle in being able to do that. But one quote which he did say, and I quite like it, and obviously it's given away a future podcast maybe, and this is when Colby was Bootsy. So he put, people have gone through their whole lives hiding their true sexuality. Not with Bootsy. I'm glad we live in different times now. Teenagers find their identity as a bit punk rock.
Yeah,
just how accepting that is.
Yeah, it's really, and like you said, I love his honesty too. And he's he's a great speaker. When he speaks, you listen.
Mm.
He doesn't have to raise his voice, does he? He doesn't have to trot. You can tell he's still got his cheeky Welsh accent and the grin. Yeah. Like he keeps his authenticity there. But what I loved about it, when they got through that, he made the song "Fly Like an Eagle," didn't he? Which was about coping with change, wasn't it? So he uses that then for other people to say, I've been through this and written this. And I think he actually says on Don't Let the Devil Take Another Day, these songs helped me through hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And then they became your songs, he said to the crowd. I mean, you interpret them in a different way. But I also love that went to a number one and the artwork was designed by Colby.
Yep.
You know, because Colby's an artist now, isn't he? So that's fantastic. We should say, I think we might reference it in future pods. I think it's July, they're celebrating 50 years of Pride as well. We'll look into that a bit more, talk about a future pod. But again, just being and also the song You're My Star. How about the family sticking together as well, which is nice. So I've always thought, I wonder what the family feel. It's so personal. Like, you know, I suppose they've got to accept it because that's who Kelly is and he is very open and honest. But it does make you listen to the songs with a different ear when you know what. So don't let the devil take another day. You don't have to watch the documentary if you can't. The album is on most streams, and buy it if you can.
I pre-ordered the record.
You did?
I was like, I'm getting that one. And it was, like I said, it did completely open my eyes just to...
Do you have to do a couple of sittings on it as well? Because like, it was like, crying, wasn't it? It's emotional, isn't it? But sorry, you're saying see a different side to it.
Yeah, well, you see him for him. You see Kelly Jones as Kelly Jones, not as Kelly Jones frontman of Stereophonics, shall we say. So I am... very excited.
I think we should bring it to that now, shouldn't we? Yeah. Really. We're doing this pod. It's number 60 there, along with the Manix and the Super Furries and all that. Probably the internationally the most successful and recognised alongside the Manix, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And we're lucky enough to go and see them at the Rearrange gig. It was meant to be at Christmas, but that was probably a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, they probably sort of were a bit too positive.
Too positive. Yeah. But that's a different. Don't know whether that's the best term of phrase to use, but
no, I think I know on this pod, but we're looking forward to seeing them with at the Millennium on Saturday with Tom Jones. Mm-hmm. Catfisher unfortunately had to drop out, a bit gutted about that, but Gruff Rhys is coming in, another Welsh legend of Super Furry ilk and solo, and we're really excited for Buzzard,
we really are and getting to see that, a band of you introduced me to quite recently, and I can't wait to.
And we know them. Ellis knows them, so we might need to pick Ellis, if you're listening.
Yeah, go on, be
have
nice.
A chat and get them on. So that's the that's the Stereophonics. You know, the latest album is Uchiha, which is what this tour is sort of pushing as well. We're going to meet listener as well, Kerry. She's going to come have a drink. Kiwi's coming.
Kiwi's coming as well. Yeah. So you know, everyone's turning up. And just so people know, I have also put Trans Helpline to their website in. So if you want to find out anything else, you know, there's lots of others. You know, Stonewall, Cymru are good. But just one, you know, if you're intrigued, or just want to find out or ask questions, then that's in the bio as well.
Seagull. Corner.
Moo.
Cow. Corner.
Don't call me a cow.
Right. We're in Seagull Corner. We're probably going to continue the theme. This is a big band for us. I meant to finish in the last section with some facts. So, just to give you the scope of Kelly's talent, 150 songs written and released, along with the Phonics, of course. 10 million records since 1997. 12 albums, with 8 of them being number ones as well. So that's big. And you wanted to mention something, didn't you?
Yeah. So, just with Graffiti and the Train, the album, so... Actually, something that Kelly Jones was looking to do was, for a while, he took a step aside and explored producing or writing things. And the initial concept for Graffiti and the Train was to be turned into some sort of series or program. And that was, he was actually writing a script
for it.
And
that's
speaking
cool.
of writing scripts, I know we have our own poet laureate
He's
here.
Back.
But what I've decided to do as Poet Laureate is hand it back over to you.
Need a sound effect.
And I know you've scribbled something down from Nora to read for us.
I was watching Phonics. I was immersing myself in the Stereophonics the last few days. And I wrote this, and I haven't changed it. I just put it down. I have a real affinity to what they do because of my background, and I think pandemic particularly, I've always been a proud Welshman, but really made me look at where I came from, talk about identity, authenticity, and I wrote this, and it's just called Valley Boy. So I'm a Valley Boy, I work hard until my hands bleed black as the coal that my forefathers mined to make other people rich. I'm a Valley Boy from a small village with a big heart and a gigantic soul, a voice that sings and eyes that glow. I'm a Valley Boy and I love my mam. I don't need a key. I just walk in. I'm always welcomed through the terrace doors. I'm a Valley Boy. I grew up in the shadow of the pit. Dreams of climbing over it and walking into the sun with a can in my hand. Look, mam, I made it. I'm a Valley Boy and I'm proud of it. Thank you, Nora. We're waiting. Gwen Clian and Brandon, aren't we?
Yeah, I know. I will get them involved at some point. So challenges, setting stuff for each other. This time I thought it'd be a nice one.
Okay.
I'm feeling nice.
Okay.
I, t- So yeah, yeah, it's feeling nice. I'm going to challenge you to see the stereophonics with me. But no, no, I think what I'd like you to do, don't be worried, it's fine. Don't have to look at me that way. Essentially, we're meeting Kiwi.
Yeah.
He's going to be there. Just buy him a pint.
Buy him a pint.
Yeah.
I can do that.
Yeah, and see if he, I'm sure he'll reciprocate it. But yeah, just share a drink and a chat with him, but just the two of you.
To get to know him a bit.
Yeah, just the two of you. Take some time. I won't get jealous.
You know,
honest, I won't get
I'll be
jealous.
Like, look at him, you'd be staring at me across the way.
Crushing a glass in my hand. But yeah, that's it. Don't worry about it. Just spend some time one-on-one with you.
Well, that's just inspired me because obviously Kerry and Matt are coming. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk in the outro a little bit about Kerry. They actually met over phonics as well, which I'll tell you about in the outro. Okay. Lovely, lovely, lovely couple. And actually, Kerry is from the same part of the world as Kelly Jones and the rest of the band. Yeah. So it really means a lot to her. Do the same.
Okay.
Have a chat with Kerry and Matt.
Cool.
Kerry's got something on board at the moment, so it might not be an alcoholic drink, which he's a bit gutted about.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, do the same.
Okay, so hopefully our wives will get on together talking. Because we're just leaving them now.
Come with me, Kiwi.
Yeah. Bang.
We're in the outro.
Yeah. As always, just another absolutely awesome podcast.
Of course.
We've nailed it again. We've been super cool.
Yes.
Yeah. So, this just a chance. Just anyone, anything you wanted to mention. I know you've just got a couple of things to bring.
Yeah. I shouted, coming back to Kerry, I know... Obviously, you're going to have a chat with her at the time, but she's a huge phonics fan from the same part of the world as the phonics as well. So I said, any memories? And she put, many memories. My dad went on a rugby trip to Ireland. Stuart Cable was on the trip and rung me singing down the phone. Such a great guy. Phonics will always remind me of a Friday night disco we used to go to in year 7-8. They played Tramp's Vest every week and everyone would go nuts because it was the local boys who'd done well for themselves. And she met Stuart a couple of times when she worked in a restaurant as well, and apparently he was one of the nicest blokes you could ever meet. She went, I have a soppy phonics story as well. Me and Matt had been seeing each other for about 6 weeks. I was going to see the phonics and my friend dropped out, so I took Matt with me, and that night I realised I'd fallen for him and he felt the same way too, but we didn't say it for a while, and that was November 2013, and then we went on a long chat just talking about the songs we liked from the phonics. So that's nice.
Lovely.
It's nice to hear
your voices. You know, please send them in. Let us know, you know, different links you've got with different bands. If you can set us up with any, that'd be great.
Yeah, yeah.
Please.
Ellis. Super cool.
I'm sure you know people, so we will find you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we got a couple of great ones coming up. So this one and the next one will be more of a traditional format.
Yep.
Then we'll be mixing up because we've got a lot of events coming up.
Yes, we've seen quite a lot of live things. You know, I've been to a lot of live shows. You know, we've had gigs, we've had films. So I think we'll do a bit of a live review that will drop at some point soon as well. So if you want us to go watch anything, send us free tickets and we'll review it.
Put us on the guest list and we'd definitely be there. Normally, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Because it's an expensive hobby, gig going, as people know. And I know Pseudo Cool have just announced some more gigs. Schlug have just announced some. We'll reference them on our social medias as well and try and get along to that. But that's it. All the stuff that you need is in the bio, isn't it, Captain? You've been working hard in the background.
It's all done.
Let's go and enjoy a concert, is it? In 6 days, 7 days.
In a few days' time. Yeah, let's go enjoy it.
I wanted to be in the moment. Let's go now.
Let's go. Let's sit in the Millennium Stadium and wait. Yeah. But for now.
It's a ta-ra from me.
It's a ta-ra from him.